Okay, so thank you everybody for coming. I really appreciate it. Whenever we found over the past 2 years that it's really whenever we meet people who my father-in-law was very close to, it's a tremendous nechama for us. It gives us almost a reminder of the things that he used to do and the people he used to associate with, but the very few people in the world that really associated with him on his level. You know, he was very tremendous on the chacham, and so there's a handful of people in the world that when we have an opportunity, now that you're a fellow alum, there's a handful of people in the world that when we have an opportunity to meet with them and spend time with them, it really is a special measure of nechama, because we know how special that relationship was, and certainly no one more so than Rav Breidowitz. The relationship between my father-in-law and Rav Breidowitz was one of, it seems, mutual reverence, although from our perspective it only was in the direction of Rav Breidowitz. Rav Breidowitz always treated my father-in-law in a way, even though he was his a balabas in his shul, treated him almost with a lot of deference and reverence. But I specifically know my father-in-law, he was very particular about, he was a big, you could say, like a fan, an aficionado of public speaking, and one of my favorite memories, it's almost hard to think of it in terms of memory and think of it in terms of being in the past. It's really one of the things I still think about all the time, is when Rav Breidowitz would speak, my father-in-law sat in the front of the shul, right near him, right near his face, and then he had his good friend Alan Schick, like, just behind him, and then he would, at a particularly great moment during the drasha, he would turn around for all the shul to see this, like, face filled with glee and excitement over the idea that he had just heard. So he was sharing it, and this was true of my father-in-law in general. He was sharing what, in his mind, was a private moment, but really the whole community got a sense of that joy that he got. So it was Yom HaTzmaut today. I think about Rav Breidowitz and my father-in-law a lot with regards to Eretz Yisrael also. My father-in-law was old enough that he was able to appreciate he was there at the establishment of the state. He was old enough to understand what was going on, and he used to go to these Tiyanisha camps. He used to always joke about how he used to do chaklaut. Now, those of you, I think most of you remember my father-in-law, imagining him doing chaklaut. It's a very funny scene, and the humor of it was not lost on him either. And he used to always tell us the motto that he was taught at camp, which was chaklaut v'tov labriyut. It was a big motto of his upbringing. And so we were told he was very, very proud to have children in Eretz Yisrael, and he had an apartment here once he was able to have a place here that he went to and spent a lot of time in Eretz Yisrael, and had some of his fondest moments and best moments here in Eretz Yisrael, and it was a source of great nachas for him. And Klal Yisrael and Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael and all those things were so important for him. But Breidowitz, for his part, was very instrumental in our decision process to come to Eretz Yisrael. When we asked him for it, he was very, very, gave us a tremendous amount of chizuk before we left. And then upon his arrival in Eretz Yisrael, he was quick to point out that it was much easier for him to give us chizuk than to come himself. he commented how easy it was to encourage us to come. But certainly now that Breidowitz is in Eretz Yisrael, we're so grateful to have that chus, and so aside from the Avas Yisrael and aside from the Avas Eretz Yisrael, was obviously the Avas Torah, which was very, very unique to the level of Avas Torah that my father-in-law stood for was very unique, and is still something that's with us every day. And so without further ado, that special connection, I'll defer to the Divrei Torah of Breidowitz.
Thank you, Ido. Again, it's a great, great kavod and honor for me to be here. I always enjoy coming to Ramat Beit Shemesh, but more importantly, to speak in honor and in memory of a dear friend and a great Talmud Chacham and really a tzaddik in both Bein Adam L'Makom, Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. Many of you undoubtedly remember Lenny, Rabbi Eliezer Chaim. And I just want to point out that there were two sides of this. I did sometimes get the smile balance shit. There are other times I noticed a momentary frown if I misquoted something or I, you know. And I used to watch because he was directly to my right as I was speaking. And I didn't want to stare at him and watch his reaction second by second. But peripheral vision, everything I said, I was always gauging. Does Rabbi Dickstein like this or doesn't he like this? So in a way, although he's a dear friend and I loved him tremendously, but you know, it was a little bit anxiety producing because you know, he basically knew every makor that you would be talking about, and if you weren't quite right, you know. Now, one thing about it though, tremendous derech eretz. Never did he embarrass anybody, and that's a very important thing. In other words, he couldn't always control that momentary little frown, but he quickly got rid of it. You know, basically, the desire was not to embarrass, but nevertheless, I became very aware and very sensitive over the years. So it was kind of my barometer. Am I doing the right? Am I saying the right thing? Am I making a mistake? So kind of, and sometimes I would actually adjust my drusha in mid-course because I realized, oh, I didn't say that right. Okay. And the like. So Baruch Hashem, I was zochet to learn a lot from him as well. And again, I want to say hello to Sue in America. And again, we're thinking about you. And I'm glad that we're able to be connected at least through the telephone line. We're in, of course, the period of Sfirat HaOmer, Machlokes Rishonim. If Sfirat HaOmer Bizman Hazeh is Doraisa or Drabanan, most Rishonim say Bizman Hazeh. Sfirat HaOmer is Drabanan, Zecher LeMikdash, because the Torah connects the counting of the Omer to the bringing of the Korban HaOmer. When there's no Beis HaMikdash, we don't bring the Korban HaOmer. Therefore, Sfirat is only Drabanan. The Das Yochid is the Shita of the Rambam that says that even Bizman Hazeh, the counting of the Omer is the Oraisa, and there are different nafkaminas between those different views. There's interestingly a third Shita, which is not as well known, that is the Shita of Rabbeinu Yeruchim, who is a great Rishon, a Talmud of the Rush. And Rabbeinu Yeruchim has a curious chiluk, a curious distinction. He says, the mitzvah of counting days, what day in the Omer, that's the Oraisa, even today. The mitzvah of counting the weeks, how many weeks in the Omer, that's only a Zecher LeMikdash. And, of course, obviously, it's a very shver, Mimanashech, where does Rabbeinu Yeruchim get such a chiluk? If anything, textually, you might make the opposite argument. Because the Pasuk of Yamim is in Parshas Emor, Tisbru Chamishim Yaim, and that's where the Torah says, Miyom Haviyachem Es Omer Atnufa. The makor of the mitzvah of Shavuos is in Parshas Riei, Shiva Shavuos Tisperlach, and there it doesn't say carbon, right? So theoretically, you could have gone the opposite. You could have said Shavuos is the Oraisa, and Yomim is Drabanan, but Rabbeinu Yeruchim says the opposite. So Bekitzer, although it's not the main thing I want to talk about, I just want to share with you a very, very interesting svara of the Or Sameach, where the Or Sameach actually says the following. The whole tachlis of the counting of the Omer is to lead up to Shavuos. We want to connect to the holiday of Pesach with the holiday of Shavuos Matan Torah, that's Sfirat HaOmer. So you have to count in the units that equal the duration of the holiday. Right? You count up to Shavuos in the units that represent the duration of Shavuos. Shavuos is a chag that has a double duration. As a chag, it is only one day, of course. But Bizman HaMikdash, it had a status of a seven-day chag, not for Malacha, but if you didn't bring your Korban Eilas Re'iyah on Yom Tov, you have six more days to bring it. That is why today, the minhag in many places, is we don't say Tachanun for a whole week, 6 days after Shavuos. So Mamela like this, Bizman HaMikdash, Shavuos is both a one-day Yom Tov in terms of the Yitzhar Malacha, and a seven-day Yom Tov in terms of Olas Re'iyah. That's why you have to count not only days, but also weeks. Bizman Hazeh, where we don't have an Olas Re'iyah, Shavuos is no longer a seven-day Yom Tov, it is only a one-day Yom Tov. So the Yomim remain the Oraisa, the Shavuos remain Zecher LeMikdash. That's the Or Sameach. Which means, according to this, The reason why Rabbeinu Yerucham says Sefirot of weeks is Drabanan is not because it's connected to the Korban HaOmer. Rather, it's looking forward. Since Shavuos is no longer a week-long chag, so you don't count in units of weeks on a Torah level. As a little aside, you know, when the Beit HaLevi became the Rav of Brisk, etc., and there's a bit of a controversy, you know, the previous Rav of Brisk had been Rabbi Shmuel Leib Diskin, who came to Eretz Yisrael, Mamish recognized as the Gadol Hador, and the Maskilim didn't really like Rabbi Shmuel Leib. They certainly didn't like Rabbi Shmuel Leib because he was a big, big Kanoi, and in fact a lot of the Kanois in Yerushalayim comes from Rabbi Shmuel Leib. But the Beit HaLevi wasn't that much better, and the Maskilim really didn't like the Beit HaLevi. They tined it, he's old-fashioned, he's retrogressive, he doesn't have the progressive ideas of his chadshus and change. So the Beit HaLevi called a meeting with them and says, and they said to him, you're always machmir, you don't understand the leniencies of halacha and the like. He says, we need a rabbi in Brisk who understands the changing times. So the Beit HaLevi said, you think I'm not, I'm only machmir, I'm not a mekel? Of course, I'm a great mekel. So he said, well, name a single psak that you're mekeling. So he mentioned a few things. One of them that he mentioned is, okay, I'll tell you where I'm mekel. I'm mekel, everyone knows the halacha, that if I miss a whole day of Sefirot HaOmer, I'm no longer permitted to count with a bracha, because since many Rishonim say that the mitzvah is described as tamimos, machlokas, so if I can't have a complete count, I don't count at all. So even though we paskin l'chumra, you count, but the suffix bracha, you don't make a bracha. Right? Everybody knows the halacha, if I miss a whole day, I can no longer count with a bracha. So Zakta Beis HaLevi, here's my kula. Since there are two different mitzvahs, a mitzvah to count days and a mitzvah to count weeks, theoretically, a person could be tamimos on weeks if he counts day 7, day 14, day 21, day 28, even if you miss days. So the Beis HaLevi was machadish, that let's say I skipped day 9 or day 10, but as long as I made the bracha on day 7, I can count with the bracha on day 14, day 21, day 28. So you see the Beis HaLevi included. I'm a mekel too. Well, that didn't really placate them that much. You know, okay, those types of kulas you don't need, but okay. But be it as it may. But let's go back to the foundational pasuk, whether it's Deraita today or Drabanan. Usvartem lachem mimacharas ha-shabbos. You start counting the day after Shabbos. Everyone knows the famous centuries-long machlokas between Chazal and the Tzedukim, who did not believe in the Torah Shebal Peh. What does the word Shabbos mean in that pasuk? The Tzedukim take it literally. Shabbos means Shabbos Bereishis, Saturday. And Sefirot HaOmer always starts the day after Shabbos, meaning the Sunday after Pesach. It's the day after Shabbos. And that's when you count Sefirot HaOmer. Chazal, the Prushin, say that's not what the Pasuk means. Shabbos in that Pasuk does not mean Shabbos Bereishis, but Shabbos is the first day of Pesach, which is a Yom Tov, that's Asher B'Melacha, that's also called Shabbos, and therefore Mimacharas is the next day, second day of Pesach. And you see in the Mishnayos and Menachos that the heresy of the Tzedukim was apparently widely followed by many, many people. And one also has to understand historically, there were times in which the Aveda and the Beis HaMikdash was under the control of Tzedukim. I mean, there were times in which Sanhedrin, again, was very turbulent. It wasn't always a situation where the Tzedukim were outsiders. I mean, often they were very authoritative within circles. So Chazal went to great, great lengths to emphasize that Shabbos does not mean Shabbos Bereishis, but Shabbos means first day of Pesach, and therefore Macharas HaShabbos is the second day. So the question presents itself. Of course, as Maminim, we believe that's what the Pasuk is, and that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu means, B'Seder B'Seder. But why does the Torah use B'Macharas HaShabbos? So the Ibn Ezra gives us a partial answer. The Ibn Ezra says, well, what's the alternative? If the Torah would have said B'Macharas HaPesach, right, that wouldn't have helped. And the reason is because Pesach in the Torah is not a reference to the 15th of Nisan. Pesach, in fact, in the 15th of Nisan is only called Chag HaMatzos in the Torah. Pesach is always a reference to the 14th of Nisan, when they shefted the Korban Pesach. Consequently, the Eben Ezra says, if it would have said Mimacharat HaPesach, that would have meant you start counting the Omer on the 15th of Nisan. And indeed, the Torah itself describes the day of Yetzias Mitzrayim is Mimacharas HaPesach Yosu B'nai Yisrael. That's how the Torah itself describes it. Well, there's a kashya in Sefer Yoshua, you see Mimacharas HaPesach means the 16th, okay, that's Tosfos says in Rosh Hashanah, that's the Lashon Nevi'im L'chud, Lashon Torah L'chud, without getting into that question, but certainly in Lashon HaTorah, the Eben Ezra is 100% correct. Pesach means the 14th. Mimacharas would have therefore meant the 15th. So in order for the Torah to tell me that it means the 16th, it has to say Shabbos, which is a clear reference to a Zman that's Asher B'Mlacha, which is the 15th, making Mimacharas the 16th. But the problem is that you still haven't avoided the ambiguity. I mean, the Torah could have said, Usvartam Machem B'Yom Shisha Asor L'Chodesh HaRishon, give a date. Why call it Shabbos and allow the tzdukim to come in? So I see some want to say, some Sifrei Machshava want to say, that since the purpose of Sfira is to lead up to Shavuos, and in Kabbalah HaTorah, we don't only have the Torah Shebichsav, we only also have the Torah Shebal Peh, so it's necessary to express this Hachana for Kabbalah HaTorah in a way that obligates you to connect to Torah Shebal Peh. That the Torah, the Daska, does not want to be so explicit in that way to emphasize the nechitzus, the necessity of Torah Shel Peh. That's a mahalach in different Sifrei Machshava. But I want to share with you a thought of the Or Sameach's other sefer, the sefer Meshech Chochma. By the way, as a little aside, Rav Meir Simcha wrote on the Rambam, and that's called Or Sameach, and he wrote on Chumash, and that's called the Meshech Chochma, and the Meshech Chochma was actually written before the Or Sameach, but it was not published until after Rav Meir Simcha's death, because his father advised him that if you publish a sefer on Chumash first, people will think you're just a darshan, and they're not going to read. Establish your credibility by a good lumbish sefer on the Rambam, and then they'll read your Chumash sefer as well. Of course, anyone that learns the Meshech Chochma knows that the Meshech Chochma is not stam a sefer of drush, and indeed it has hashkafa, kabbalah, and also much, much lumbish and halacha in it as well. But the Meshech Chochma says the following. The Meshech Chochma says that by the Torah calling Pesach Shabbos, the Torah is meramed that of all the Yomim Tovim, Pesach is the most Shabbistic, the most closely connected to Shabbos. How is that so? If we think about the difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov, we see two fundamental differences between Shabbos and Yom Tov. Difference number one is on Yom Tov, there's a heter of Ochel Nefesh. I can do malachas for food preparation or other Yom Tov needs. I can carry. I can use fire. I can, starting a new fire is a separate thing, but certainly I can light candles, whatever it would be. There's a heter of Ochel Nefesh. Shabbos, there's no heter of Ochel Nefesh. There's only heter of Pikuach Nefesh. If it's a matter of life and death, I can do what I need to do. But short of that, for Shteitzach, I can't cook because of Einat Shabbos. That's a lametes malachas. That's difference number one. Difference number two is the mechanism of how the Kedusha comes into being. Shabbos, the Kedusha comes totally from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every seventh day is Kadosh, whether I know it's Shabbos, whether I don't know it's Shabbos, whether Klal Yisrael keep Shabbos, whether they don't keep Shabbos. The Pasuk says, Vayivarech Elikim es Yom HaShvi'i Vayikadesh Oso, the Eibishter sanctified Shabbos. Even though we say something that's called Kiddush, but you have to understand, it's a Dover Pashat, it doesn't mean we are sanctifying Shabbos. We are acknowledging, we are recognizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sanctifies Shabbos, and thus, Baruch Atah Hashem, Mikadesh HaShabbos. Yom Tov is totally different. Yom Tov, the Kedusha actually comes totally from Am Yisrael, based on Kiddush HaKodesh. The reason why Pesach is the 15th of Nisan, or what determines, rather, when it is the 15th of Nisan, is actually not the calendar, and it is not astronomy, and it is not the movement of the sun and the moon in and of themselves. It is because the Sanhedrin was Mekadesh Rosh Chodesh by Kabbalah Eidus, and by being Mekadesh Rosh Chodesh, that begins to count. Ad Kidei Kach, that the Mishnah says in Rosh Hashanah, in the famous Dion of Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Akiva taught Rabbi Yoshua that even when the Sanhedrin was Mekadesh the wrong day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu basically says the Kedusha of a Yom Tov is going to follow that wrong day. In other words, even if it's wrong, it becomes right. Even if it's wrong astronomically, it becomes right. The Kedusha is totally on us. Now, if so, the Rambam asks the obvious question, well, wait a second. So if today we don't have a Sanhedrin, and we don't have Kiddush HaChodesh, and we're simply working off the Jewish calendar, how could there be a Yom Tov? Who was Mekadesh the Chodesh? So the Shita Rambam, again, there are Rishonim who argue, but the Shita Rambam, which is the most widely accepted Shita, is that the only reason we have Kedushas HaMoedim Bizman Hazeh is only because the last Sanhedrins under Hillel Hasheni, when they calculated the Rosh Chodeshim, they were Mekadesh those Chodeshim in advance, which is also an interesting Chiddush. You could be Mekadesh or Rosh Chodesh that's going to occur 1,000 years in the future. And as a result, and according to many, by the way, it only goes up to the year 6,000, because we're Maimon that Mashiach must come before the year 6,000. So theoretically, hypothetically, it's not going to happen. If Chas V'Shalom, there wouldn't be a Geulah by the year 6,000, there would no longer be any Yomim Tovim, because there's no Kiddush HaChodesh. Even though astronomically we can extrapolate the calendar forever and ever and ever, we can know when the dates would be, but if there was no Maisa of Kiddush HaChodesh, there's no Kedusha. That is why for Shabbat, it's Baruch Atah Hashem Mekadesh HaShabbat, and for Yom Tov, right, it's Mekadesh Yisrael V'Hazmanim, it's the Kedusha of Yisrael, and that is why when it's Shabbat and Yom Tov, the Nusach is very meduyak, Baruch Atah Hashem Mekadesh HaShabbat V'Yisrael V'Hazmanim. So, we have two chilukim, again, b'kitzer, between Shabbos and Yom Tov. We have the heter of Ochel Nefesh for Yom Tov, which we don't have for Shabbos. And we have the fact that the Kedusha of Shabbos comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Kedusha of Yom Tov comes from Am Yisrael, acting through their Sanhedrin. Rav Meir Simcha then goes on and says that these two distinctions actually emanate from a third distinction that is the basis and the reason for the other two. And that third distinction is the fact that Shabbos commemorates an idea that intrinsically has nothing to do with the Jewish people. Hashem created the world in 6 days, and he rested on Shabbos. So to commemorate Hashem as the Borei HaOlam, I refrain from exercising my working on Shabbos. Now that has nothing to do with Klal Yisrael. In theory, if we were simply asking ourselves what's logical, since HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created everybody, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created everything, everybody in the world ought to keep Shabbat. And yet, Pumpaser, what does the halacha say? Goy Shabbat, if a non-Jew wants to keep Shabbos as a religious day of rest, Chayav Misa, he's not allowed to. Hashem gave it to us as a matana. Right? Everyone knows the famous Chazal, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Gemara in Beya, says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is quoted as saying, Matana achas yeshli bebeis kenazai. I have a precious treasure in my storehouse. A precious gift in my storehouse. The Shabbos Shema Lech Emor Lahem, go and tell B'nai Yisrael. Rav Meir Simcha says, why is Shabbos called a matana? Because what is a gift? It's something I didn't earn. It's something I'm not entitled to. It does not correlate to my efforts. It's a matana. So Rav Meir Simcha says, since Shabbos, by the way, you know the old joke about, that's why even when a guy is learning for Geiris, the guy is instructed not to, to turn on a light, not to keep a whole Shabbos in order not to be a guy Shabbos. So they have the Maisa about the very, very firm candidate for Geiris who was studying in a yeshiva. He was learning, and he seemed to keep all the chumras, all the halachas of Shabbos. So somebody went over to him and said, listen, I know you're studying and Bez Hashem you'll be a real Ben Taira, but Lamaisa, you can't keep Shabbos totally. He says, don't worry, I carry in your Erev. So the thing is that if the pshat is Shabbos has nothing to do with us, it's a gift. That is why we don't control its kedusha, and that's why Shabbos doesn't bend for our needs. We become batel and tafel to Shabbos, because Shabbos doesn't come out of us. It does not come out of our experiences. It was given to us, therefore we're not a bialim over the Kedusha, and there's no heter of ochel nefesh. Yom Tov is totally different. Every single Yom Tov emanates from the historical encounters that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has with Am Yisrael. Because of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we have a Pesach. If there wouldn't have been an Am Yisrael, there wouldn't have been a Pesach. Shavuos is Matan Torah. Sukkos, the Anane HaKavod we paskin, which is a sign of Hashem's forgiveness for Am Yisrael. Yom Kippur is the tshuva that we did as a result of the Chet HaEgel, which gave us Kapara. Rosh Hashanah is a good question. I'm going to have to leave it for another time. L'chayre, Rosh Hashanah, it is hard to pinpoint a unique relationship with Am Yisrael, because Rosh Hashanah, of course, is the Yom HaDin, because that is the creation of Adam HaRisha. At this point, you'd have to get into a longer shmooze that, in a sense, Am Yisrael, Atem Kriyam Adam, Am Yisrael is kind of the repository of the mission of Adam HaRishon. Okay, we can leave that for later. But certainly, Pesach Shavuot Sukkot. Without us, there wouldn't be a holiday. We are the reason for that holiness. So Zakrav Meir Simcha, if we are the reason for that holiness, that is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us control how we create the holiness, Kiddush HaKodesh, and that is why it yields to our Tzarachim, Ochel Nefesh, and the like. Because if the holiness exists only because of Hashem's relationship with us, so we become the bialim over it. And that's why, indeed, Lahalacha, those of you that learned Daf Yomi came across this recently, that is why on Yom Tov Taka, you can't do Malacha for a good. Because the lumdus of why Eichel Nefesh is Mutter is, since this Yom Tov came only because of Kedushas Yisrael, so it becomes, we become the bialim over that Kedusha, to use for our needs, but to do it for a behema, to do it for a goy, etc., that would be awesome. The Gemara even says that you're not supposed to invite a goy to a Yom Tov meal because of a chashash midrabanan. Maybe you'll do extra cooking. But people get confused sometimes. The drabanan is not to invite him, but to actually cook for a goy. That's an issur d'oraisa. That's not a drabanan. That is a malacha mamish. Poskim of all sorts of kulas. Unfortunately, you know, Baruch Hashem in Eretz Yisrael, maybe it's less of a problem, but as everyone knows, intermarriage in Rahman al-Islam is a tremendous, tremendous problem in the United States, other countries as well, and if they ain't bias, they share ain't shameis, and the Poskim have to grapple. I want to, when a person wants to invite their child to a Seder or to a Yom Tov meal, and Chas v'Shalom is an intermarriage, right? So the Poskim are very, very makel, but again, I do want to emphasize, all of the kulas pertain to inviting, but to cook for the guy, vada, vada, it's a refresh of that as well. Okay. So now, going back, so let's go back. Now remember, this is all part of a long hakdama to the question of why Pesach is called Shabbos, right? So now we're going to go back to that. And here is the argument. If we understand that Shabbos is that which is unearned, undeserved, a matana, and Yom Tov is that which comes because of us, Zakrav Meir Simcha, of all of the Yamim Tovim, Pesach is the most Shabbistic. In the sense that although Feshteitzach, obviously, Pesach exists only because of Am Yisrael, I mean, that is a truism, but it really was not something that we deserved. Remember, we're in Mitzrayim, we are on the 49th level of Tumah. We should have been in Mitzrayim 400 years, but we had to leave immediately that minute. Had we stayed another minute, right, the amount of time it would take even for the dough to turn into chametz, when it says like hispik b'tzeikem, so everyone knows the Ari, actually it's not a chazal per se, but the Arizal says the Lashon, that we would have been on the 50th. We would have been on the 50th level of Tuma. We would have been irredeemable. By the way, a little aside, I think they say B'Shem Rav Chaim Volozhiner that the concept that once you hit the 50th level, you're irredeemable. So we like to look at ourselves and say, well, obviously, we didn't hit level number 50 because we're still here, etc. Zech Rav Chaim, after Matan Torah, even if you hit the 50th level or the 51st level, Torah gives you a way out. So we can't be misgoya that we're better than the Yidden in Mitzrayim. We have Torah, so we have that crutch that can pull us out of the deepest Tumah. They didn't have Torah yet, so had they hit Shar Nun, there would not have been any particular way of getting them out. So the emphasis, we were not deserving of redemption. Hashem had to give us some mitzvahs that put us over the top. That's Dam Pesach and Dam Mila. And even though the Gemara does say we didn't change our name, we didn't change our language, apparently the understanding is Hashem has to look for something. Meaning these were not the chuyos that entitled us to anything. But it's like a bank giving you a loan. Let's say a banker wants to make you a loan because, you know, you're a nice guy, you have your friendship, whatever it is. But, you know, you don't have any assets. So he looks for something. Is there anything here? Let's look around for something. But intrinsically, we were not worthy. And therefore, Pesach represented a matnas chinam, a gift. And the Torah is emphasizing that the geula of Pesach was beyond our madrega. It was something we didn't earn. It was something we were not entitled to. It was like Shabbos. It was a matana achas shiyeshli b'eskenazai. And that's miyuchet for Pesach. Because by Shavuos, we had earned something with Matan Torah. Sukkot is the culmination of after Yom Kippur, the Simcha of Teshuvah, etc. Baber Pesach is Matnas Chinam. With this idea, we can go a little further. The Meshech Rabbi does not address this. And that is, people ask the question, the Sefer HaChinuch asks the question, what is the idea of Sfiras HaOmer? So he says very pashut, and this is our understanding, that Sfiras HaOmer is designed to connect the idea of Cheiros, freedom, with the idea of Torah. That one shouldn't think we have two different holidays. A holiday of freedom, right? Today is Yom HaTzmut, you know, without getting into the politics of Yom HaTzmut. And, you know, obviously people will debate this, and certainly every rabbi who applies for a job in the United States will always be asked, what is your position on Hallel be Yom HaTzmut? I'm not going to say. But one of the small issues, maybe it's not so small, is some people don't like the word Atzma'ut. Yes, Medinat Yisrael is wonderful and we're grateful and Nisim v'Niflos, but Atzma'ut, Atzma'ut means freedom, it's a modern word, freedom, independence. Jews don't celebrate independence in the abstract. Even Pesach, which is Aman Cheruseinu, the Sefer HaChinuch says, we start counting the Omer the second day, I'll discuss why not the first day, because we want to link freedom with Torah. You know, Tagore was an Indian poet who won the Nobel Prize for Literature around World War I. Very, very great poet, obviously not Jewish at all. But he once had a startling metaphor. He said, a human soul is like a violin string. If it's totally loose, imagine you have a guitar string or a violin string, free, it's on the table, put it on the kitchen table. What music can you get out of a free string? Nothing at all. When it's stretched on a frame, then the beautiful music within gets expressed. And Tagore is making the point that we think when I submit to the will of God, I'm enslaving myself, I'm limiting myself, I'm cutting myself off. With freedom, without that commitment, there's aimlessness, there's anxiety, there's despair, there's hopelessness. In fact, that's why it's not an accident that suicide rates for teenagers tend to be higher in affluent countries. And when you're spending the whole day looking for bread, you don't have time to think about the crises of life. But when a person has material sustenance, they don't have a goal, they don't have a purpose, they don't have a sense of meaning in their lives. That creates tremendous anxiety and tremendous depression. Ad kedei kach, that God forbid a person could kill themselves or even kill others, as we see in the teenage murder sprees in the United States. So the Sefer HaChinuch says, just as Chazal said, Pesach, which is freedom, we have barley, which is animal food, and Shavuos, which is Torah. We now progress into human liberation, human dignity. So that's why we have the counting of Omer to connect to Pesach and Shavuot. The Yishbitzer says, the Yishbitzer was Rav Tzadok's Rebbe. And in recent years, the Mei Shilolach, the Sefer of the Yishbitzer, has gotten popularized by Rav Shlomo Kalbach, Alav Shalom, and a lot of his Talmidim. So the Yishbitzer has now majored in the popular world. But the Yishbitzer was a very, very profound Rebbe. Obviously, to have a Talmud like Rav Tzadok, you have to be quite a great person. And the Yishbitzer says, you know, everyone knows the minhag that Ashkenazim have an hard-boiled egg at the Seder. And there are a lot of reasons. It's Nicham Aveilim, right? The egg is oval, and the first night of Pesach is the same night as Tisha B'Av, and we're sad over the Korban Pesach. But the Yishbitzer gives another reason. The Yishbitzer says that a bird, a chicken, unlike a mammal, is born in two stages. An egg is laid, and then later, the egg is hatched. The chick emerges from the egg. So we want to remind ourselves that although Yetzias Mitzrayim is the birth of Am Yisrael, it's only the first part of our birth. The egg was laid, but we truly did not become an Am until the egg is hatched, which is Matan Torah. In a way, it's very nice because we don't start counting the Omer until the second night. So the egg is a Svira Sa'omer reminder, even the first night. So we know it's a double portion. In fact, some Rishonim use a Lashon that the days between Pesach and Shavuot are like a Chol HaMoed, connecting the holiday of Pesach and the holiday of Shavuot. In fact, I even saw a Svara, look, there's no marker for it, I think, in Rishonim or earlier, but somebody wanted to argue that the original origin of why we don't get married or get haircuts during Sfira is not because of the death of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, and it's not because of Abelis, it's because of Hilchos Chol HaMoed. That's a very fascinating chiddush, although did you see a marker? Yeah. But I don't know if there's any marker. Now, of course, that wouldn't explain the different minhagim. I mean, that should be a 49-day thing in that way. That's a fascinating point. So the Sefer HaChinuch asks the obvious kasha. The Sefer HaChinuch asks, if the purpose of Sviras HaOmer is to connect Pesach and Shavuot, because without freedom, without Torah, is Hefkeres, so why don't we start the first day? Why is it only Mimacharas HaShabbos? So the Sefer HaChinuch himself gives an answer, that we have a klal, Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha. We don't like to mix together. We don't like to mix together different sources of joy. So, for example, even though, in terms of halacha, there should be no problem with making a chasana chol hamoed, but we don't do it because we don't want the joy of the yomtiv to take away from the joy of the chasana. It's an interesting thought generally, because we think more joy the merrier. But no, the concept is we want you to be focused totally on a particular joy. Ein ma'arvin simcha b'simcha. So the Sefer HaChinuch says, the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we want you to focus on that, don't bring in other holidays. Azeitak, the Sefer HaChinuch. It's a little difficult, it is a little difficult, this is not such a pashut answer, because if indeed we say that Matan Torah is the purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim, so it's not like I'm thinking about some other simcha. It's part and parcel of what I'm celebrating. The Sefer HaChinuch is a little schwer. I'm not going to answer the Sefer HaChinuch. But based on this Meshech Chachma, I want to share with you a different answer. And the Yesod of this answer is found way before the Meshech Chachma in the works of the Bava Tanya in Likutei Torah. Not in the Tanya, but in the Sefer of Likutei Torah. And let me start off with something from Rav Nachman of Breslov again. These are just different things. No one refers to anyone else, but but it's something that's very helpful. Rav Nachman of Breslov raises an interesting psychological question. All of us are familiar with the phenomenon of being a chozer b'tshuva. Ruch Hashem, in fact, all of us should try to be a chozer b'tshuva. Everyone has a famous ma'isa. Everyone knows a famous ma'isa where a Talmud of Or Sameach once was zeichet to meet the Ger Rebbe. This was around 30 years ago. And the Ger Rebbe asked him, "Where are you learning?" And the Bacher said, "Or Sameach," but he hastened to add right away, "But I'm not a Baal Shuva," meaning I'm an FFB, I'm a firm conversion, I'm not, you know, I'm up there. So the Ger Rebbe looked at him and said, "You're not a Baal Shuva? Why not? Every person has to be a Baal Shuva. Is not a class of people. A Yid has to live with Shuva, unless you're perfect. I don't want to say anything negative about anybody. Maybe there are perfect people, but but a Yid that's not perfect has to be a Baal Shuva. What's the alternative?" Okay. But Rav Nachman says, when a person is fresh in Judaism, they will often experience a tremendous joy. Davening is great, and benching is great, and Shabbos is wonderful, and Torah is fantastic. And then, as they go on in time, they get habituated. Things become rote, routinized, routine. They no longer have the yislavus, they no longer have the excitement, they no longer have the passion. Now, psychologically, we could explain it by simply saying, well, listen, you do something all the time, it gets boring after a while. But Rav Nachman says, in Ruchnius, that doesn't make sense. Because if we believe that Torah and mitzvahs bring me closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how is it possible to say, the more I do, the less I get out of it? How can it be that I do more Torah and I feel less connected to Hashem? That doesn't work. I mean, you can't apply it like anything else, just I do more of it so I get bored. This is Makasha Meter the Rebbeinu one. But, you know, there was, many of you have heard of the Lincoln Square Synagogue in New York. You know, that's a modern synagogue, but they have a very good Jewish outreach program for many years. Rabbi Ephraim Buchwald's been doing it for many years. So, years ago, there was a fellow that was honored at the banquets of this outreach. It's a very famous speech, kind of an immortal speech. It's available on the internet. And the speech was entitled, "Why I Hate Baalei Tshuva." Again, it was tongue-in-cheek. And he basically said, "I get home after working a whole week Friday night, you know, I want to have a seudah in 20 minutes and I want to go to sleep. So as I'm rushing through Kiddush, you know, my Baal Tshuva guest says to me, 'Could we talk about what it means that Hashem created the world in 6 days? And you know, and every time you're asking me questions and you're making me think and, you know, you want to sing Zemiros and you want to say Divrei Torah,' I says, 'I want to go to sleep.'" He says, "That's why I hate you guys." But he was making the point, a satirical point, but a true point, that somehow the newcomer has all of the cheshek and all of the desire and all of the enthusiasm. What happens to us? Zakt Rav Nachman, let's look at the mashal of parents trying to teach a child how to walk. A baby child learns to walk. The parents hold the baby, and the baby puts one foot in front of the other foot in front of the other foot, and he's making progress. He or she is making progress. And if the baby could verbalize his thoughts and feelings, the baby would say, "Hey, this walking isn't too bad. Pretty good." At some point, the parent lets go, and what's going to happen right away is the baby's going to plop, plop, plop. By the way, as an aside, it's important to remember, as many times as that baby falls, that baby will pick himself up again. And the Berditchover used to say, that's a wondrous thing, how a child does not give up. We are born, even crawling. Do you remember how hard it is for a baby to crawl? The baby's like pulling himself on his stomach, pulling himself. Why is he giving himself that pain? Why is he dragging his stomach across the floor? What is propelling him to do that? But, as Chazal say, there is a malach over every blade of grass that is telling that blade of grass to grow. And kal v'chaymer, over every child, there is a malach telling that child to grow and steig and keep on going and don't give up. We lose that as we get older. And the Berditchover said, one of the greatest sources of chizuk is look, and it really is a truly amazing thing. A child does not give up. That he'll walk, crawl, you know, just go on. But the child does fall. And if the child could verbalize his thoughts, once again, the child might say, why was it so easy a few minutes ago? And now I'm losing all my progress. But the answer is going to be, it was easier because your parents were holding on. But now you're strong enough and capable enough to take what they were giving to you and making it your own. Zakt Rav Nachman of Breslov. This is how it is in Avodas Hashem. When a person is new to Yiddishkeit and they're very far from the Ribono Shel Olam, there is no way on their own that they will have a korva to Hashem. So Hashem takes them and Hashem carries them and Hashem brings them to the highest mountain. So then for Shteitzach, they see joy and excitement and goodness. But then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I've shown you what you can become. Now I'm going to let go. I'm still here to support you if you fall. But I'm going to let go. I've shown you what you could be. Now, become it. And therefore, Rav Nachman says, counterintuitively, that when we have struggles in Avodas Hashem, it is Hashem having confidence in us that we're capable of being successful. That's what he says. The Yerida is a sign that Hashem is saying, you're strong enough now to grow. The Lakutei Torah does not use this mashal, but the Lakutei Torah says, this is the relationship between Pesach and Shavuot. And it ties into the Meshech Chachma. Because Pesach is a matnas chinam, we didn't deserve it. Hashem gave us a hiskalus, gave us a revelation that was really beyond our madrega. He carried us. He took us to the top of the mountain. He showed us. What does the Gemara say, the Medrash say? That even the maidservant on the Yamsuf, the Shipcha Layam, saw more than the Navi Yechezkel. People saw everything. They were carried beyond their madrega. But after Hashem showed us what we could become, He then puts us on the ground and says, become it through the slow, gradual, incremental process of Sfiras HaOmer, which unlike Pesach, which is a sudden revelation, the Omer is gradual work, day by day. There are many Svarim now that emphasize the idea, based on the Sfiras in Kabbalah, that literally every day of the Omer has a unique, particular Avodah. Right? One could look at these Svarim, both in Hebrew and in English, and one can get a sense of the particular chesed, shebegvura, whatever the combinations are in different ways. But the one thing we can say about the Omer is that it does represent gradual growth. It represents incremental progress. Because unlike the Pesach, which Hashem just shows you everything at once and lifts you up, Svira is Hashem showed me what I can be. I now have to work to make it my own. Based on this, the Baal HaTanya says, we now understand why Svira is Mimacharas Hashem. Pesach is the day of revelation, the day of Hiskalos, the day in which I perceive the relationship with Hashem with clarity and tremendous godliness. But the next day, you got to start working, so to speak. I mean, you say, Pesach is the day when I take it in. But then there's the next step. The next step is Mimacharas. Right? So that's the idea of Mimacharas HaShabbos. Because ultimately, how does the t-shirt saying go? What Hashem gives me is Hashem's gift to me. What I do with it is the gift I give back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Baal HaTanya quotes, I believe it's the Zohar, on the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, which is a metaphor for the great love that exists between Am Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Knesset Yisrael, as the beloved woman, says to Hashem, Moshcheini acharecha, pull me behind you, pull me, drag me, Narutza, so we can run together. The Zohar says, Moshcheini acharecha is Pesach. Hashem pulls me like a sack of potatoes. Narutza, but I run together on Shavuos, because then there's reciprocity. I give back to Hashem by Torah, by mitzvot, by avodah, narutza. I run with the Ribono Shel Olam, as opposed to Pesach, in which I benefit from that revelation, even though it's not my natural. When we look at what is our central avodah during Sfiras HaOmer, we find a bit of a contradiction, or at least a bit of a tension. On one hand, obviously, like the Sefer HaChinuch says, we recognize that freedom without Kabbalas O Malchus Shemayim is not only useless, but destructive and even evil. So we have to intensify our commitment to Avodas Hashem, to moving from the barley of the animal to the wheat of the human being, to become the violin string that ties itself down, as it were. Or as Eric Fromm said — Eric Fromm happened to be Jewish, but he was a Talmud of Freud, who was also Jewish — but Eric Fromm used to remark that society makes a big mistake when we define freedom as freedom from something. We have to ask our question, freedom towards something. It's not enough to be free from something. Freedom, by definition, cannot be a purpose in life. Free to do what? Free to be what? Why? What is freedom? So, again, Sfira, as the Sefer HaChinuch says, is the Makasha. Seen in that level, what does a good Jew do during Sfira? I intensify my Torah learning. I intensify my tefillah. I do more mitzvahs. I want to be Makabel O Malchus Shamayim in a serious way. You become starker. Starker, firmer, more committed in your avodah. This is the time of Aliyah. Hashem gave you a freebie on Pesach, although it was acknowledgement to the women. I recognize my description of Pesach as this easy gift that Hashem gives you may not resonate with you exactly, but that refers to the physical cleaning. In terms of the spiritual enlightenment, Hashem does indeed give us a spiritual enlightenment beyond our madrega. Although we're not always zochet to be open to it, but if we are open to it, there is something very great and awesome that Hashem reveals. But then we have another theme of Sfira. Logically, this should be a happy time. Joyous, Matan Torah. And yet all of us know that in the period of Sfira, different minhagim, which days, there is an undercurrent of sadness, an undercurrent of mourning, of avelah. And the Gaonim tell us, again, by the way, this is not in the Gemara. There is no din in the Gemara of any Avelos during Sfiras HaOmer. But it dates from the time of the Gaonim, so it's fairly early. But the Gaonim say the Minhagim of Avelos that developed in Sfira, it's well known, is based on something recorded in the Gemara. And that is, the great Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 students. That itself is quite a beautiful story initially. If you remember, Rabbi Akiva was an Amo Ores. Rabbi Akiva was an uneducated shepherd who worked for Kalba Savua, one of the richest landowners in Yerushalayim. And Kalba Savua's daughter, Rachel, wanted to marry him, fell in love with him, etc. And her father disinherited her from marrying such an Amo Ores, such an ignorant person. And yet, although she lived in poverty, she sent Rabbi Akiva to learn, and Rabbi Akiva learned for 12 years, and then he came back, and without even saying hello, he overheard her say, "Can go back for another 12. He went back for another 12. That's a whole mussar. Why couldn't he say hello? Why couldn't he have a cup of coffee? There are two interpretations that many Mepharshim give. One is that one hemshich of 24 is not the same as breaking it up. He didn't want to break it up. The other is, more of a humanistic interpretation, had he given himself a minute to say hello, he wouldn't have had the heart to go back. He had to be cruel to do what he had to do. He couldn't allow himself that little bit of rachmanas, because then he couldn't have taken himself away. Such a kind of a tragic dimension. But at the end of this time, he comes back as the greatest gadol of Israel. 24,000 talmidim. Imagine that. That's even bigger than Mir, you know, gigantic, 24,000 something. And now this poor woman who's been living in rags and living in poverty for all these years without a husband, she sees how the sacrifices were worth it and what it produced. Can you imagine the joy in her heart? And she comes to approach Rabbi Akiva and they push her away. They think she's a crazy woman. And Rabbi Akiva says, no, no. Shali v'shalachem shalahi. Everything I did, everything you have is only because of her. Imagine the joy. Imagine how all of her life now has meaning and purpose. Everything collapsed into dust. 24,000 Talmidim over the years died between Pesach and Shavuos. Either they stopped on Lag BaOmer, you know, again, there's different ways of calculating it, etc. They died. And since this happened during Sfira, so the Gaonim say, the Minhagim of Klal Yisrael is to have Avelus, and later, of course, this got augmented among Ashkenazim. That's why Ashkenazim are more Machmir in Sfira. Because during this period of Iyar and Sivan, there were many crusade activities and massacres. That's why you'll find in Sfardim, there were fewer bad things that happened during this Tikufa, so the Minhagim were not as strict. And the Gemara in Yavama says, why did the students of Rabbi Akiva die? Because they did not show proper kavod, zelos. And the emphasis, people ask the question, all right, obviously 24,000 students is a big tragedy, but what can I say? We've had worse. I mean, we've had Holocaust, we had 6 million Jews. I mean, am I mourning 24,000? So again, one answer might be that the whole Messiah of Torah was through those Talmidim, and in fact Rabbi Akiva was able to preserve Torah only because he had 5 other Talmidim he got later. So Chas v'Shalom, in a sense, this was even worse than the 6 million. Because this could have ended Torah Lagamri. But the other point is that it's not so much that we're mourning the deaths of Rabbi Akiva's students, but rather we're trying to be mesakein during this period the particular Aveira, which is something we can't do for the Holocaust, you see, because since for the Holocaust, we don't have Nevi'im, we don't have Chazal, we don't know specifically what it is. We could be besakin. But for this we know. And if for this we know, we can work on it. I can work on what I know. It's much harder to work on what I don't. But what is the meaning they didn't show kavod to them? How could that be? Who was their Rebbe? Their Rebbe was Rabbi Akiva. What does Rabbi Akiva teach? V'yahavta l'rayecha kamocha is the most important klal in the Torah. And love is connected to kavod. Because kavod is the respect you have for someone's goodness. And yet, for whatever reason, Chazal says, they didn't have proper kavod. What does it mean, kavod, to have kavod? Rav Shimshon Afal Hirsch says, etymologically, the word kavod means heavy, kavod. So kavod does not refer to, I'm polite to you, I hold the door open. I could treat a person with etiquette, but I really look at them as a lightweight. I look at them as an insignificant person. Kavod is, I look at somebody as having weight, having heft, having significance, having, indeed, in English we often use the Latin word gravitas, which literally means weight. Having kavod for another person is to see them as a tzelem Elokim, to see them as somebody significant. I want to point out that in the Kirov world, and I'm a little involved in the Kirov world, this is sometimes an occupational hazard, and it's a serious one. Sometimes the message that a kid might get is, you're really nothing, you're a piece of garbage, but out of my infinite mercy, I will show you the great wisdom that I have, and I will enable you to be lifted out of the sorry condition that you're in. Well, even practically, this is not a way of getting people to Yiddishkeit. Because nobody likes to be told that they're worthless, but I have a way of giving you value. That's the opposite of kavod. Kavod is the acknowledgement of the chashivas of a person. To see a person as significant, to see them as having strength, to see them as having minus. And then they're open to growth, and then they're open to becoming greater, not so much by changing themselves, but by bringing out the kochos that are already in them. Now, why the students of Rabbi Akiva didn't have that kavod for each other, that is a hard question. Some say that they were so connected to their Rebbe that they felt they didn't really need to connect to each other. Might be, you know, we're not really sure exactly. Some say that they were so humble themselves that they didn't bother showing kavod to others because they felt they didn't need kavod. On the other hand, that's a mistake, because Rabbi Shlomo Salanter used to say, somebody else's gashmius becomes my ruchmius. The fact that I don't need something doesn't give me a heter legabe somebody else. But be it as it may, that does mean that our avoda during Shiva is to look at other people and identify them, the kavod, to see their strengths, to see their minus, to appreciate, to look at the chayal who gives his life or risks his life for Am Yisrael, whether he's religious or not religious, as someone that is moser nefesh for Am Yisrael. To look at policemen, to look at garbage men, to look at Yom HaTzmut today, or at least we're leaving Yom HaTzmut, to look at all the people who create an environment where Jews are able to learn and do mitzvahs, and to acknowledge and respect the contribution that they're making. This is also nichlal in kavod, Zelos Ezra. First is telling us, kavod is not about external politeness. Kavod is about shifting an attitude where I look at a person and I see their worthiness, I see their potential, I see their goodness, and I appreciate it. So, the upshot is, our assignment during Sviras HaOmer is twofold: to become stronger in our learning and in our mitzvahs, and to become more respectful and tolerant and accepting of the infinite varieties of human beings that Hashem put in the world. Our problem is that these two assignments seem to be contradictory in many, many ways. And we see this in Eretz Yisrael. Everything is more vivid in Eretz Yisrael. You know, America's pastel. Here we deal with primary colors. Everything is
black and white.
Black and white. Well, okay, black and white, you're right. That's technically not even colors, but okay. But the concept is that we find that, unfortunately, sometimes happens. Again, there are many, many exceptions, and I don't mean to generalize and stereotype. But we sometimes find in our own lives that the stronger and more passionate I get in my Yiddish, the less I'm able to see the goodness in someone who is not moving at the same intensity that I am. And le'idach kisa, the more tolerant and accepting I am, maybe the more slipshod I am about my own aliyah. I'm okay, you're okay, everything's okay. And yet, Sviras HaOmer is telling us, you got to do both. Because in truth, they are not inconsistent, contradictory pathways. They are inextricably linked. That as I grow in my Torah, in my Avoda, in my Yiras Shemayim, I learn to see the godliness in every person. Not to endorse actions. Indeed, you know, the actions can be wrong, actions can be misguided. But to understand that most people, most Jews, most times, and yeah, there are exceptions, maybe there are exceptions, but most Jews, most times, are not motivated out of evil. They're not motivated out of a desire to destroy Am Yisrael. They're motivated out of a desire to help Jews, although perhaps they might be misguided in various ways. You know, I don't want to get too political here, but this issue about, you know, I'm in a neighborhood where I hear rhetoric about fellow Jews being called Amalek and pogroms, and this is the worst gezeira, this is the worst gezeira than the Korban Beis HaMikdash, etc. Hitler, you know, Hitler was nothing compared to, you know, what the Jewish state is doing. And I will tell you, and maybe I am naive, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I haven't been here long enough, so you know, I might be a real Amoritz in these areas. But I think if you take, you know, the various things that are going on in the Knesset, you know, whether you oppose them or not, and again, there is strong reason to oppose different initiatives, reasons to support, you know, one can debate, one can argue. But the issue is not there's a group of people who wants to destroy Yiddishkeit. Maybe there are people who don't understand the primacy of Torah learning. Maybe there are people who don't understand how Limud HaTorah is essential for the security of Am Yisrael. Okay? But everybody involved is trying to do what is best for Am Yisrael. So even if I vehemently disagree with many agendas, I can respect a person who is trying to do his best. And I can tell you this, Shlomo HaMelech, the Chacham Mikol Adam, said, "Kamayim ha'podim al-panim, kein leif ha'adam li'adam." Water reflects the face that you show it. You smile at the water, you get a smiling face. You frown at the water, you get an angry face. Shlomo HaMelech concludes, "Kein leif ha'adam li'adam." The heart will reflect, the heart of one person will reflect back to me that which I show that person. I show that person disdain. I show that person, I demonize him. He will look at me exactly the way I look at him. Now people might ask, okay, well who's supposed to start this process? Why should I, you know, look at him if he looks at me in such a negative? Well, the answer is, you know, somebody has to start it. And as all the Baalei Rishos Lezion used to say, he wanted to change the world. But he recognized he couldn't change anybody. But he could change himself. And when he changed himself, he changed other people too. A person who believes in Torah has to take the first step. A person who knows this is the Ratzon Hashem has to take that step. And I will tell you that I truly believe, based on Tamayim Apanim Apanim, that if we follow what Chazal teach us, to show kavod, to be misakin, to see the legitimacy of at least the she'ifos and the yearnings and the desires, then they too would see the she'ifos on the other side, and an accommodation could have been made. If I could step on thin ice once again, maybe I'm already in the cold water, we had in Yerushalayim a great asefa, a great kinos, a few weeks ago, 800,000, some say 500,000, there are different estimates how large it was, but a kinos, and Baruch Hashem, at least it avoided the invective and the insult, and that's a tremendous progress in Yerushalayim, that it did not turn into negative, and the Graysa Yashkayach, that really is a very, very great accomplishment, and it's a kiddush Hashem. But what would have been at the end of a kinos, asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Siyata Dishmaya, that people who want to learn should be able to learn, because learning is so important. Indeed, of course it is. And it's not only important spiritually, it is important to the security of Medinat Yisrael. What would have been at the end of the kinos? A tefillah would have been recited for the chayalim who fight in the army, acknowledging that they too are contributing to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to create. I think if either Mashiach would have come right then, or the Chalapachas, the whole atmosphere of the debate would have turned into a different issue. Which, yes, I mean, it's amazing how politics is actually children's games in many ways. You know, children often behave because they want attention from their parents. They want positive reaffirmation. Well, the dirty secret is adults play the same game. If they just hear, if people just hear, yes, yes, you have a point. Yes, you know, we need an army, and yes, we appreciate. There could be appreciation on all sides. But again, these are things to think about, and obviously people here, you probably know a lot more than me, but L'Aniyas Daiti, this would be a mafteach to many, 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 many tensions in this country. Rav Chaim Shulevitz used to say, What's the pshat? There's a lav in the Torah, lo siya kakairach v'yadasai. Right? There shall not be a situation like kairach and the Eda. And the Gemara Sanhedrin says that's the yisur of machlekes. But Rav Chaim Shulevitz used to say, al pi Jerush, that this pasuk is not necessarily a commandment. It is making a statement. There will never again be a machlekes like kairach against Moshe. What does he mean? Kairach against Moshe, one side was totally wrong and one side was totally right. Zok Rav Chaim Shulevitz, that's the only time you're going to get that. Every other machlokas in the future, there'll be right and wrong on both sides. And when you start saying that I'm right and the other side is totally wrong, you're over on that pasuk, lo siya kekayach yadasa. That only happened once. This is what the Chaim Shulevitz used to say. I just want to end that in many ways, the notion of being stark and passionate and strict and machmir, and at the same time being loving and open and tolerant and accepting. In our polarized world, you often have one or the other, and it's very difficult to have both. But I want to say that on this occasion, we're honoring a Nifter who in his own life was able to achieve a synthesis, a combination of those midos. Anyone that knew Lenny knew that in spite of the fact that he was a working man, although I knew him already towards the retirement years, he was a person that Limud HaTorah was a passion, and this was not superficial Limud HaTorah, but Limud HaTorah be'in and be'amkus and with hasmada, diktuk in halacha, very very meticulous to follow halacha exactly, to go to the makairis and to try to live a life of yirah shamayim. And he was not a person who cut corners. He was not a person who looked for leniency. And in fact, he would often ask Shilas, and again, I would be embarrassed sometimes that he would ask me a Shilas, whatever. Why does he? And he could look up the same things I would look up, maybe even know them better. But he said the person has to ask a Rav. This is the kavod of Rabbanus he had. He had a Rav in New York with Ramanik, she should be well, and I was his Rav in Silver Spring. So he was a person who exemplified Torah b'hasmada gemura. I remember him after Shacharis every day learning Zuvachim, Menachas, hard Masechtas, Be'iyam. He gave a share. I mean, there are people he has interviewed. I mean, he gave a share for more than three decades. There were Talmidim who learned with him for 30 years. How many people have a Kesher to the Rosh Yeshiva for 30 years? So he exemplified a Yirei Shamayim, a Masmid in learning, and a Medakdik in Halacha. And at the same time, those of you who are Zochet to know him, know a person who was able to schmooze, to joke around, to make people feel comfortable. If you were a person who was not zochet to be very learned, you never felt uncomfortable in his presence. He was able to bring out the goodness in you, to show respect to you. You felt respected, you felt legitimated. He was a Murav Bein Abriyos, loved to laugh, to joke. He made jokes about himself. He never made jokes about other people. He would never say anything that would make another person feel bad. Like he always made himself like the object of the joke. So, if we ask ourselves, how is it shayach for us to combine these two extremities? All I can tell you is that we have a person within our memory, and again, Baruch Hashem, there are others as well, who was able to combine those two extremities. And that is our avodah during Sfiras HaEmor. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu give us the Siyata D'Shmaya to take the Hiskalos of Pesach. Hashem showed us what we can become, and to make it our own Madrega by intensifying our Avedas Hashem, but by also realizing that without Kavod, without Avas Yisrael, without Achdus, our Avedas Hashem is not going to accomplish its result, and the Avedas Hashem itself is Chaser and Pogam, and only with that Shlemus will we be Roy from Matan Torah. Maybe be such.
Okay, thanks everybody for coming. And thank you especially to Breidowitz. I know that he would have felt very happy to see all of you. He felt very close to many of you as well. And this gathering would have definitely warmed his heart, brought a smile to his face, and certainly the Divrei Torah of Breidowitz. would have done so as they did so many times as well. So thank you so much for the course of coming. Rav Reitz himself is an Avil, he'll be davening Maariv here now. So from the Amud. So what? Yeah, the breakaway menu will be next door. Some people who want, we have a minion, but we are going to the kever tomorrow at our Tachaim, tomorrow at around 8:40. Hello. You're able to hear? We're going to dive in Marv now, okay? You want to speak to Tara?
Are you able to call you back?
Okay, brother.